You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, we're just back from an interesting trip to Nashville. You were there for the better part of a week, and I came in about midweek, and we finished out the weekend partying together.
if you want to call that partying, okay.
just as good as two people like you and me could party, okay? I think we're well past our partying days.
I don't think we party like they party in Nashville by any means.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know about you, but as you remember, about, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we looked at, during our escape from California, we looked at Nashville, Tennessee, and suburbs outside of Nashville and ranching areas to make our escape to. And we came pretty close in a nice little town outside of Nashville called Franklin, sort of a tony little ranching community. But the kids wouldn't follow us there. So we made a decision not to make our move there and instead to move outside of San Antonio, Texas, in the Texas Hill Country, which was a beautiful move.
It is beautiful. I love it here, and I think it was the best decision for us.
But, you know, I want to talk about Nashville and what our observations were.
Yeah.
Because I found that Nashville, just in the last couple of years alone, has changed significantly. What are your thoughts?
Well, it has changed significantly. There's a few interesting things. I was at a business meeting, so I was pretty much locked up all week. But I did notice that the food was much better than I had the last time we were there. So that was the good news. The bad news was that there are so many people downtown on Broadway that it is absolutely insane to try to walk there. And what I noticed was it was dirtier. And it was very, very noisy. And there were a lot of homeless people on the street begging. And not just homeless people, Ron, that being people without homes. People were there that had severe mental health issues. People were there that had signs up, you know, that they needed drugs.
Because they were addicted to drugs.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, you said that it was dirty. I will say that it was really dirty. Not just dirty, but really dirty. And the sidewalks were dirty. They were actually filthy. And the streets themselves were dirty. There is huge exploding growth going on in Nashville right now. And it kind of reminds me that, by the way, I was told that there are 100 people a day moving to the city of Nashville, which is going to spill out to be pretty soon 1 million people. That's a pretty big city. And what's going on, which reminded me of San Diego, which, you know, I go back and forth to all the time, we'll be there next week, as a matter of fact, is that the downtown area basically is a core area. So it's really kind of small. And the whole, what you would say is the Nashville experience, is only about 5 square blocks. I think it goes from the river up to about 5th Street and then going north 2 to 3 blocks and south 2 to 3 blocks. But that is pretty much Nashville downtown, where all the clubs, you know, Luke Bryan's got his club called Luke's 32. Blake Shelton's got a place called Old Red. Jason Aldean right across the street with Jason Aldean's place. Florida Georgia Line, just a block or two from Broadway. All the big names, you know, and then the old stuff. B.B. King's place on, you know, 2nd or 3rd Street and those kind of places. But it was multi-story clubs all open out to the street and packed from floor to ceiling with people. And I mean a lot of drunk people. Now, I remember Nashville not too long ago as a venue where you would go to enjoy country music right? Country, Western music.
Sure.
And you would do a little drinking. That paradigm, at least in my humble opinion, has completely changed in 4 years, where now it is quickly replacing Las Vegas as a heavy drinking, heavy partying town where the excuse is to go listen to country music. And I think that's a huge paradigm shift.
Well, it is. And I still love walking down the street. And I mean, just everywhere, there's music out of every single bar. And the music is really good music.
Yeah.
And it would be a place for somebody to go and try to make their mark in music. But when the mayor that was the mayor, which was a woman, what we heard, and I don't know, I did not look this up, so I am just speaking secondhand.
Right.
What we heard was that she had done something unacceptable with a constituent, and that that got onto Facebook and social media, and she was forced out of office, and a Democrat took over. Well, the Democrat that took over, and by the way, Nashville has become a very, very liberal town now, which it was not in the past. So when the Democrats took over, I mean, here again, like in every big city where they are in power, what you get is all these homeless people on the street, all these people begging, the streets are no longer clean. There are some exceptions. Chicago's a good one. That's an exception. Even New York is not nearly as bad. But when you go to places like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and now Nashville, unfortunately, man, it was really a shock to me.
Well, you know, you can't go more than, I don't know, 50 or 60 feet without getting hit up by some beggar. And the ones that worry me are the people with the clear mental health problems that are talking to themselves or yelling, standing in front of a building, looking up in the, you know, up in the sky and yelling or screaming. And I got to be honest, I didn't see very many police down there. And for that many people in that congested of an area, I would have hoped to have seen more law enforcement personnel. But I was saying that Nashville is just exploding with growth, and it reminds me of San Diego because they're going vertical. And so what we're seeing is 25, 30 story high rise condominium projects, hotels, and office structures that just reach way up into the ceiling. And at the same time, you've got, I think we saw in just, I don't know, a half square mile, 15 cranes, you know, for construction
right.
projects. But those cranes are out in the street. There's construction debris out in the street. They blocked off some of the streets or made the streets narrower. And during the daytime, early morning, when people are trying to get to work and when they're leaving work, it's catastrophic. I mean, it's just terrible. I don't know how those people do it. And before, if you remember, just 4 or 5 years ago, when we were on the highway, and I forget the name of the highway that's, you know, there's an intersection of three different highways going through Nashville, the real estate lady said, because we said, wow, is this all the traffic you have? And I think we were there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which would be, you know, a good rush hour time. And the traffic was medium at best. We were driving around, if you remember, on a Saturday, and it was, I mean, terrible traffic. And the downtown was crowded, and there wasn't anything going on. I mean, pretty soon you'll see festivals going on,
right.
and country music festival, and other things going on. And that's really going to bring in a lot of people. And they were telling us that when they had the recent NFL draft, that they had like 1 million people in the town, of which about 600,000 were in the core downtown area. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. But to me, you know, what it brings home is what has changed, not just in Nashville, but in all of our big cities. So San Diego is a good example. Los Angeles, San Francisco.
Right.
You name the big city, Seattle, Portland, all of these places, which are full of homeless people all over the streets. And because we are not doing anything about it, and because our politicians are allowing this and basically condoning it, nothing, you know, this is just a disgrace in this country that we have allowed this to happen, that we as a country are not taking care of the mental health of our citizens, that we have done nothing to give them a place to go to get help or a place to be involuntarily committed and get help, whatever it takes. But they don't belong in the streets where they are a threat to other people.
Well, and they're a threat to themselves. So let me go back over this, because I think you saved yourself there for a second because you were mentioning other components. But it isn't the politicians alone. The politicians, I think, are the impetus of this. All right, they're the people that should be in control of taking care of some of these issues. But you can't have the problems that we have in Nashville and in San Jose and San Francisco and Los Angeles and San Diego, I mean, you name it. You can't have those problems without the acquiescence and approval of the court systems. And we see that even in Texas in a couple of the larger cities, where you see superior court judges, because that's where these issues happen, at the superior court, municipal and superior court level, where you get these judges that think that it's absolutely fine for you to be able to sleep in a box, to sleep in a car, to have 15 shopping carts, to sleep under blankets, to sleep in doorways, to sleep on people's private property, commercial and residential property. It's totally fine. It's not fine. And then when you talk about the tremendous health issues that I get to see, you know, in my business as a criminologist and as a security consultant, going to all these big cities, the people who are the taxpaying, honest people with their children are powerless to do anything about it. And so you've got condoms, feces, needles, the containers of drugs. All of these things are floating around, and then you get hepatitis, you get cholera, you get typhus, you get all of these things that we shouldn't have, flesh-eating diseases. And a lot of this stuff also comes from an illegal alien that would come across the border with, that is unvaccinated and would have these issues, and they have no place to stay, so they go in with the homeless. And with the homeless are also the violent felons, the parolees, that states like California have kicked out of the prison system, and they have no accountability. State parole has been decimated. You and I have talked about that before, but it's not happening just in California. When it starts happening in places like Nashville and in other places, that is dangerous. And they are making bank in that city. That's one of the things that really bothered me this weekend that I had not noticed as much before. They are, I can't believe how much liquor they sell in that town. And they are taxing all that stuff. And these clubs are making tens of millions of dollars a year. And the city council and the mayor in that town had better get their act together and start creating some municipal codes and start working on this homeless problem that they have, this mental health problem, not only in the city of Nashville and in Davidson County, which is where it is, but statewide in Tennessee. And then let's try to get these people off the street that are a danger to themselves and danger to other people, and get these streets cleaned. There is no excuse for not having a city ordinance that forces businesses that are making tens of millions of dollars a year to power wash down those streets and to keep their properties and their curtilage clean. I think it's disgraceful.
Well, and see, I think that that's a city issue, because the city owns the sidewalks.
It is.
But because they're bleeding heart and they just think that they're that these people have a right to do this, and the courts, like you said, agree with them. What about all of our rights to walk down the street without that type of intrusion in our life, in our day? They always give the rights to those that are the kind of the underdog rather than the majority who are doing the right things. And I just think that that's really wrong. And you take a city like that, which is a vibrant, beautiful, scenically beautiful.
It is. It's a beautiful city.
And fun and so much going on. And you take it and you downgrade it and you destroy the whole environment for people like us. And by the way, we went home early. We did
and,
not.
And why did we go we early? Because we had enough.
Yeah, we were not enjoying going out and trying to fight those crowds and, you know, get hit up for money every 10 seconds and try to go get a meal somewhere. So we were frustrated and we left.
And having to look over our shoulders. And so look at all the beautiful cities that are now run by Democrats that have turned into cesspools. And we're talking about San Francisco, where I was born and raised. They took that beautiful city and destroyed it. You take a look at Portland, Oregon, and I was just up there a couple of weeks ago on a case, destroyed it. Look at Seattle, Washington, they're destroying it. I feel so bad. We talked about Christopher Rufo over there, that's sort of a one-man Don Quixote there, trying to take that city back. And now look at Nashville. Look at all the beauty and the resources that Nashville has, and to have it start spiraling down, and I'm sure people will disagree with me, but let me tell y'all, you have to go there to see it, to experience it. And you will see that that town has got problems. They have time to fix those problems, but if they don't, here's what I think is going to happen speculatively. They're going to have billions of dollars in revitalization and regentrification and all these high-rise, very, very expensive, you know, condos and things, and nobody's going to want to be downtown. And those condos are going to start devaluating in price, just like they have in some of those other areas. Now, let me say one last thing before we have a little coffee break here for a second. You and I had opportunities to talk to several street officers there and ask them about, you know, what do you think about all of this? There wasn't a single one that liked it. None of them liked it. And they told us that officers, that the department is having a real problem trying to get officers to come and work in that city. And the officers, a couple of them that we talked to that are near retirement, said, we're going to take our retirement the day that our 20's up and we're out of here. And normally we would stay longer. But because we don't like the way the city's being managed, we don't feel appreciated as officers, we are going to go and do something else. What a loss of experience. And as the crime rate is going up in Nashville, because it certainly is going up, you are not only going to have a problem with the experienced officers and people that would promote to detective, and you'd have the experienced detectives, you're not going to have that anymore, and you're going to have a hard time bringing in new officers. And I'll tell you what, as you and I know, because we've done this for a living, it takes gumshoe, it takes experience and motivation to be a detective that solves crime. And when you don't have that, you're going to have a problem in that town. You watch.
Well, and I will say that we were so impressed with the police in Nashville area, and as well as the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. I mean, really, really, both are just class acts. And you want to keep that kind of experience, and you want to keep those guys training the next guys coming up. And if they're all leaving, that's going to be a problem for Nashville as well.
And you know, people like the mayor and the city council have got to start thinking in it with a different mindset, a different paradigm, because when you think of the hundreds, if not thousands, of years of experience that Nashville officers have, both the street officers and detectives, and for those people to leave and to be not immediately replaced and always having a manpower allocation problem and never having enough experience, the people in the city of Nashville are going to suffer.
I want to say one more thing about Nashville is that a friend of ours from America Out Loud, who has a show on America Out Loud, Carol Swain,
Dr. Carol Swain,
is running for mayor of Nashville. And I truly hope that she wins, because she will make a very positive difference in that city.
Dr. Swain is absolutely brilliant. A black female running
class
for
act.
Class act 100%. that would be my vote for the mayor of Nashville, and we wish her all the best.
Yes.
Let's have some coffee.
You got it.
Well, the Out and Out perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I want to talk a little bit about the tariffs that President Trump has imposed on China. And, of course, China is retaliating and imposing tariffs on the U.S. So what is a tariff? A tariff is an amount of money that has to be paid to bring something in. So let's just take a very simple example that if something was $100 and the tariff was 25%, then you'd have to pay that 25% additional, but that money actually comes to the U.S. government, okay? So that's not a bad thing.
So, in other words, wait a minute, Linda, what you're saying is that the tariff is a tax by the United States government on international goods. So if an item normally costs $100 and there's a 25% tariff, that item would cost $125, but then the United States government would get that $25.
Yes.
Okay.
So they have put a 25% tariff on some Chinese products. I mean, the hysteria that we have in the country is, oh my gosh, you know, it's on everything. No, it's not on everything. It's on things like flat screen TVs, medical devices, aircraft parts and batteries. And there's 1,300 imported goods that will face these levies. And then there's going to be another set, which we can talk about in a minute.
Now, can I ask you, does that include some of the Japanese, I'm sorry, some of the Chinese cars that come over?
Well, I don't know all of the things that are tariffed, but I don't see the cars at this time. What Trump has done strategically is he has targeted items that are not going to be hurting Americans a lot at this point. So he's starting in this place. And, you know, of course, he's taken a lot of heat, as he does with everything that he does, about the tariff. And President Xi doesn't want to give an inch on this. So he's going to impose tariffs on us. And, you know, there's a lot of naysayers and a lot of people that are supposed to be in the know that are saying, you know, how terrible this is. This is not the way to do this. And I say, where were you all the last number of years when China has been taking advantage of us?
And, under both Republican and Democratic administrations.
And where were you? And what suggestions did you have? Because you did nothing about it. And President Trump is actually doing something about it. And I still believe that we will win this battle. But we cannot have a country that is really an enemy to us in very many ways, and especially in the technological war that we have between the two countries.
Well, the espionage is ridiculous.
Exactly.
I mean, they have built up everything that they have because of the espionage against the United States and some of the Europeans. You know, for instance, their Air Force, some of the sophisticated aircraft that they've developed, they stole from us. Some of their ships, some of the ways that their ships are put together, and they stole from us. Almost everything in technology they have stolen from us.
And they continue to do that with our willingness to get into their market, and we have to give them some of our trade secrets to do that. And, you know, he's saying enough is enough, and that we have a serious trade deficit, and there's no reason for it. So he's doing something about it, and I like that he's doing something about it. Now, I am in a business that is going to be affected by the tariffs. Most of the products that I sell are not yet affected by any of the tariffs, but they will be. And I'm okay with that, because if it's across the board, either people will decide to buy the item or they won't. And then they'll pick something different.
You know, I really enjoy having a conversation at this level with you, Linda, because of all the people that I know and I've met, you stand out as, because you've been doing this since Christ was a corporal.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. I mean, you know, being a broker of goods, a number of goods which come from China, I don't know anybody that I would rather talk to that has their feet firmly planted on the ground and understand, you know, about these tariffs and understand about these costs and how that affects the average American. I don't think I've ever met anybody that knows this stuff better than you do. So I like this conversation.
Well, thank you. I'm sure lots of people know it better than me, but I just, in the world that I live in, you know, I see what affects me. But the thing that I like here with President Trump is he gave up until a time of May 15th to have meetings and have people who are affected by the tariffs speak their piece and say why they shouldn't be and why this item shouldn't be subject to a tariff. Who does that? He's not unilaterally just imposing things on people. He's asking for their feedback and their opinions.
But you don't get that from the mainstream media
or if you're
listening to the Democratic politician talking heads. It's like he's doing this unilaterally. And I've always seen that President Trump is a consensus builder. He always has meetings. You know, the things in the Obama administration, that was probably the least transparent presidential administration that we've ever had. And Trump always brings people in. That is the sound of a good business person and a leader.
Well, it is. And China has continually broken
its promises.
Its promises and the trade rules. And so he's calling them out on it. And I think that they're going to stand firm at first and they're going to impose their own tariffs. And that may hurt our farmers. And I would suggest that President Trump find a way to help our farmers because we need our farmers to be solid.
Okay, now something that I heard today, and I heard President Trump say this himself, I listened to it on the news today, and he said, listen, I understand that they're going to retaliate, and they'll probably retaliate agriculturally
yes.
against us, and our farmers could get hurt, but I promise we are going to take some of the tariffs that we earn here in the United States from the Chinese and redistribute that back to our farmers.
Oh, did he say
that?
Oh,
yes, he said that. He said that today.
And that's exactly the right thing to do. Listen, he is a man that has a heart, and he's not out to hurt Americans at all, but he doesn't want Americans to be taken advantage of. And China has walked all over us for a very long time, especially under Hillary Clinton and Obama.
And you know what? And let's put the politics in there again, because now we have Sleepy Joe Biden, who is going to be, right now he's ahead. So there's a good chance. I mean, things can change. I mean, we still have, you know, some time.
A lot of time.
You know, before the election. And, you know, historically, the person that's in the lead almost never ends up being the winner. But, you know, Biden is saying, oh, the Chinese is our friends and don't worry about this. Well, yeah, you know, and that's exactly what got us into trouble and so badly in debt during the Obama administration, because Obama and Biden, who never said anything against it, they let the Chinese run roughshod over us to the tune of about a loss of about $500 billion a year, $500 billion a year.
Well, because they don't understand business whatsoever, so they think that they just had to kowtow to China, and they never should have. And they had no idea what they were doing financially in that administration whatsoever. So now we have somebody that understands finance, understands money, understands the art of the deal. And that's what you need with these people. You have to be tough with a President Xi. You cannot let them walk all over you, or they will. I hope he stands tough. And the next round, right now we're at $50 billion getting tariffs. The next round is going to be $250 billion.
Well, I hope he doubles down for sure.
And I'm all for it, because those are things like toys and phones and sneakers and things that will hurt the pocketbook of American. Guess what? Americans buy American. Maybe this will enable people in the United States to think about, maybe I should start a sneaker company. Maybe I should start a toy company and have it be American made. There are so many pluses to this. And, you know, could it blow up in his face? I suppose it could, but I don't think it will. I think that we are going to hurt them financially more than they hurt us.
You know, I agree with that. And my feeling is, and I'm gonna pick on a Japanese guy, and that was Sony. Sony said, business is war. And that's what this is.
Yes.
Okay, this is war. And so with me, I don't mind paying more money. Okay, I would rather buy American. I would rather be patriotic and buy American. I don't care if I have to spend more money to defend this country from the Chinese in this economic war, because I believe what President Trump says and his economic advisors. Ultimately, if we stick this thing out, we will win and they will lose. And I would rather win this war instead of, you know, going backwards like Joe Biden would do, and Obama, and probably all these other Democrat people running for president, and then have to fight this war again.
Sure.
And again.
Biden
and again
doesn't believe in this.
He doesn't want
to do this. He wants to kowtow to China.
Exactly.
Why? Because he made a lot of money on China in his day. But, you know, the items, the consumer items, you know, microwave ovens, curtains and drapes, clothing, coffee makers, hair dryers, all those types of things are going to get a tariff in the next round if this continues to go on. I'm good with that. You know, there are a lot of these items now that are being made by other countries like Vietnam, like South Korea, India.
Absolutely. Yes.
A lot of these countries are making these items. Let's buy it from them.
And you know, they're going to fill in that void because it's a supply and demand world. And so when the Chinese goods are too expensive for Americans to buy, then they are going to look at places like those countries, like Vietnam, like Indonesia, like Japan. They're going to look at India. They might even go back and look at things in Europe. And then the other thing is, listen, this is a disposable society in the United States, and we have to take a second look at that mindset. Listen, I'll hang on to my flat screen TV for two more years, all right? I'll hang on to my sneakers for an extra year or two. You know me, I keep sneakers forever. And I'll look at other places to spend my dollar. And I don't need to buy things in China. And so if Americans would just follow our President of the United States, if they would think patriotically and about sacrifice, and believe me, the sacrifice is not much because there's so many other places in a global society, in a global economy, for them to shop. Just look at another dealer of that product.
Right. And President Trump already told people and companies that to avoid the tariffs, start moving your production out of China and into countries like Vietnam, where they don't have to pay that. And, you know, I mean, if you can afford a big flat screen TV, then you can afford a few more percent on it. And that the amount of money that this is going to bring into the United States is going to allow us to do other things. And by the way, you know, I'm kind of done with the tariff. So it just reminded me of something when I said that, Ron. I was thinking today, you know how I was looking at the price of gas as I was driving home today. And in Texas, it's, of course, far lower than in California or in other states. And I thought, you know, how is it that Texas cannot have all these exorbitant gas taxes? They don't have state income taxes, yet the state is so incredibly well run. And
all our roads are beautiful.
Our roads are beautiful. They are far better than any other state that I've seen. And how is it that this happens at where, say, in California, where the tax is so high and they have a huge state income tax and they just can't take enough of your money? They're taxing you every which way. Yeah, and they can't still, you know, make ends meet in that state. So what is that about the mismanagement of money? It's a big peeve of mine because I always say that politicians cannot balance their own checkbook. If you gave them a checkbook with a bunch of numbers in it, they wouldn't know the first thing how to balance it to a bank statement. Yet these guys are running these big giant economies. And in Texas, they really take care of their citizens and their economy, where a state like California runs just over the people and no matter what. So it was just a thought that struck me on the way home at what a difference that there is in the price of things, yet how well run the state is.
Well, you know, our motto in Texas is, in Texas, anything is possible. And that is the mindset that, you know, Governor Greg Abbott and his legislature have. You know, Linda, coming from California now, you know, being citizens of the great Republic of Texas, you and I truly understand and appreciate what it's like to have good leadership and financial leadership.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. And, you know, it's just a pleasure. You don't feel put upon and you don't feel used and abused. You feel like just part of the state. It was interesting, back to Nashville for a second, that we were talking with a gentleman at one of the hotels that we stayed in who had also evacuated from California, but he evacuated to Nashville, as we had thought about doing. And he's outside of Nashville, doesn't like going in town either.
go figure.
But he said that, you know, how liberal Nashville has become. And he said, I wouldn't move to Texas. And I said, really, why would you not move to Texas? And he said, because all the Californians are moving to Texas and they bring their politics with them. And what I don't understand is why you would want to evacuate from a place because of their politics and then bring those politics with you to the new place.
Because the people that do that and they bring that, what I call blue baggage, to Texas are the people that they say, not in my backyard. So you started all that crap in your state, California, or as we call it now, Calizuela. Calizuela. And now you want to come to Texas, but you still want to have that same libtard attitude, and you want to bring, you know, your blue baggage here.
But yeah, we don't want it.
But then you don't want those homeless people in your backyard. You don't want those people with the mental health issues in your backyard. You don't want the crime in your neighborhood to go up, but you want to do everything and vote for everybody that would make all those issues surface in a red state. And I resent that. And I think that's what that gentleman was talking about, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, when speaking about blue baggage, Texas State University students in their academic senate just recently voted, and I can't even believe this because it is the Republic of Texas, but they just voted to ban police officers from campus. Okay, but that's the academic senate. So it's not the administration of Texas State University, it's the academic senate. And the person that made that resolution that they voted on, who authored the resolution, here her name is Claudia Gasponi. Claudia Gasponi. So why did Claudia Gasponi author this resolution? Because she had been recently arrested by the police on campus with three other counter demonstrators in protesting and violating school laws, which probably meant she violated somebody's rights, and enough to get arrested. So her way of dealing with the inconvenience of having to follow the rule of law and being forced to follow the rule of law and being arrested because she couldn't follow the rule of law was to get rid of the enforcers of the rule of law.
Well, but that's happening nationwide, and it's a disgrace, and people will be very, very sorry that ends up happening.
Well, what happens when there's an active shooter? There's no cops on campus. What happens when there is a riot, when there's violent demonstrations and people are getting injured and the school is being burned and there's no cops on campus? You know, my question is, all right, that's the academic senate. Where are the adults in the room, which is the university administration? So I'd like to see what the university administration has to say about that. And let's have our last cup of coffee.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, at Amazon.com.
Well, as we round the bend to our last segment of our coffee conversation, I wanted to talk about this increasing crisis at the border, because now what is happening is, because of the hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants and their families that have crossed over the border, that is requiring an astronomical amount and a huge effort by Customs and Border Patrol to process these people and handle this humanitarian crisis. And what's happening, because, you know, you can't pour 10 gallons of water in a 5-gallon can, is that they are, meaning the Customs and Border Patrol officers, administration is having to pull officers from what you and I know are referred to as secondary Border Patrol custom stations. And those are the ones after you leave Mexico, you know, you go through a border crossing, but then as you're entering into the United States, like 10 or 15 miles up the road, sure. And by the way, it works both ways, you know, also, you know, 10 or 15 miles from the border, we will run into these border check stations. And that's the secondary check station in case people got past them. And now they're looking for drugs. You know, they have all the thermal recognition technology. I mean, you name it. They've got all the different technology, and they've got the canines, the drug sniffers, the weapon sniffers, all of those types of things. And they're pulling those officers from those assignments, which means that those secondary Border Patrol check stations are open.
Closed.
Well, meaning closed, but right. Open, and anybody can drive through
yes,
them now.
And we just saw that on our last trip across the country.
Exactly right. Yeah. And so when you talk about, and matter of fact, Linda, this is one of the stations that you and I passed through very recently, coming back from California to Texas, and that's in Otero County, and that's in New Mexico. So Otero County is not a border county, but it borders the border county, which is the county where El Paso, Texas is. And so by yanking those Customs and Border Patrol agents from there, closing that station, what the county administrator, I think they call him the chairman of the county, and his name is C.R. Covey Griffin, he said, it's kicking our butts because we can't stop these cartels. We are having a heck of a time. Our sheriff, and I think his name is Sheriff Black, David Black, is saying, listen, I've only got 3 men in my department, in my narcotics task force, to handle all the dope that comes from the cartels coming through my county. And we are overwhelmed because they have depended, as do all the counties that are border counties in Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. They all depend on the federal government to help them with task force officers like Border Patrol, and they don't do it now because they've yanked all the Border Patrol officers.
Right, and it's interesting because Beto O'Rourke, who is rapidly becoming insignificant in his quest for the presidency, along with Kristen Gillibrand, you know, I mean, we drive through El Paso and
on a regular basis.
You know, I mean, he was the guy that was supposed to be the big, you know, politician there. And I'll tell you what, it's not a place in my mind that I would want to hang out in. So anyway, I understand the problem on the border. We see it constantly. Everywhere that we drive through is a border state. And you see it constantly. And in fact, I will say that along the way, Ron, we stop at so many establishments and we kind of have our little favorites to stop and eat, little Mexican restaurants, little hole in the walls, a lot of them are run by Mexicans. They don't like this. They don't want them there. They are scared. They don't want the illegals there. And we just were through Ozona, which we like. It's a nice little town. I bet in its heyday, it was really a cool town. They've got How many did he say people working on the oil
On the pipeline. 7,000. Now, there's Ozona is a town that has about 5,000 people in it, and they've got 7,000 guest workers working on the new oil pipeline going through Texas.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But anyway, yes, the border is a huge problem. We talk about it all the time. But, you know, there's one little bright side of the border is that President Trump just quietly managed to get another $1.5 billion from the Pentagon for more border wall. So little by little, he is doing it quietly, and he's just making it happen.
And we're starting to see that in our sojourns between Texas and California and vice versa. We are starting to see the new border wall sections go up. And I'm glad to see it.
Yes, me too. I want to talk about some good news.
Great.
So one of the biggest problems that we've had in our country with our veterans, of course, has been their health care. And President Trump campaigned that he was going to fix it. Now, there was no reason it couldn't have been fixed well before President Trump, but like a lot of things, they weren't. But back in last year, actually, Congress passed the Mission Act. And the Mission Act gives the Department of Veterans Affairs the ability to provide veterans with the best possible health care, whether at the VA healthcare or at their own private doctor, community providers, wherever they choose to go. This is a big deal for our veterans. They can now get healthcare without the long waits. They can go closer to home. They can, have the knowledge and the security that they deserve as veterans. So with this Mission Act, Ron, the future of the VA health care system is going to be in the hands of the veterans where it belongs, rather than some big monstrosity of a government agency. Yeah, so I really appreciate that. And the patient's trust in the VA care has skyrocketed to 87.7%, which is huge.
Well, you know, whenever we see the government involved in anything, it's never a good thing. So anything that improves upon the incompetence of federal government programs, I'm all in favor of. Okay, well, I've got a good news story for you, okay? And this is a fascinating story because it involves a therapy horse. Have you ever heard of a therapy
horse?
Sure,
I have, huh?
Oh, well, darn it, I hadn't. Okay, well, this horse is a 14-year-old stallion, and his name is Peyo, P-E-Y-O. And he's a therapy horse that goes and visits hospitals and assisted care living facilities and assisted care homes. And his handler, his name is Hassan. And Hassan takes Peyo with him, and they go right into the hospitals. And I saw some fascinating video. And the horse is the one that makes the selection of what rooms he wants to enter. So he's got sort of a sixth sense. Some of these doors are closed, and he'll walk down the hallway. All of a sudden, he'll stop. He's not directed by Hassan at all, and the horse will stop, and he'll push his nose against the door, and Hassan will open the door, and they'll find a patient inside, and the horse walks right up to the patient and kind of looks the patient over. And, you know, some people are like, oh, my God, there's a horse in my room.
I think I would be that way.
But the faces and the way that the horse changes the attitude and buoys them and is a real morale booster is fascinating. And the horse will touch them with his face and touch their chest and touch their hands and will allow the people to pet him. I mean, he's an empath, all right?
Yep.
So the horse.
Yep.
And I just thought this was a fascinating story because I have seen a lot of different therapy animals, but I hadn't seen a therapy horse.
No, and you know, my sister has therapy Great Danes that she takes to hospices and hospitals. And
which are as big as horses.
Yes, they are as big as horses. And you know, they're just such a gentle, large dog, but they absolutely have a wonderful effect on people. The Brady campaign had put on an event for the young lady in Colorado that was shot by a fellow student.
And remind us of what the Brady campaign is, Linda.
Well, the Brady campaign is a campaign to prevent gun violence, and it was formed back when Ronald Reagan was shot, and his chief of staff, Mr. Brady, was also shot in the head. And although he lived, he suffered, you know, just tremendous injuries and was never able really to go back to work.
Right, and he passed on just a couple of years ago, and so the foundation carries on in his name.
Right. Well, they set up an evening for a vigil, what was billed as a vigil in the Colorado school, in the suburban Denver school, to really honor the student that was shot. But they turned it into a political event, talking about gun control and gun violence. And, you know, what is really interesting to me is that the students got very upset about this, and they en masse got up and walked out. And the person who put on the event ended up apologizing to everybody. But, you know, I'm really glad to see that they just didn't sit there and take it and be used by these people as political pawns instead of just being there to honor their friend.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the progressive left and the anti-gun people, David Hogue, right, from Parkland,
yes,
High School, from the Parkland mass shooting. He's a member of one of those groups that go around and do exactly this. You know, there's a time and a place if you want to protest gun violence, but when you are there to say good things about a person that has passed and to honor that person's service and their memory, you know, service to the school and their memory, you know, an anti-gun violence, anti-Second Amendment protest or speech or something is just not the place. It's extremely disrespectful.
Right. And Colorado is a place where there are a lot of hunters and a lot of gun owners, and they don't want to be accused of being the source of the problem. They feel that they like their Second Amendment in Colorado.
And, you know, we have several really close friends of ours that live in Colorado, and I don't think that, because there's every time you see something about Colorado, it's always something liberal. It's, you know, marijuana legalization. It's this and that. Everything centered around Denver. But the truth of the matter is the vast majority of the people that live in Colorado are actually conservative, and they keep talking about a separation of the state of Colorado and having a northern Colorado and a southern Colorado, just kind of like the way people talk about California. So I don't want our, you know, coffee listeners to get the idea that all of Colorado is a liberal state, because that's just not the truth.
No, but you know what else was interesting about this? It's something you and I talked about just this evening about mental health issues. And these students recognized more than the media recognized, because the media didn't talk about the mental health of the shooter. They talked about gun control again, where when these students walked out, they were chanting mental health, mental health, mental health. They get it.
Right. And that's the big deal, because these issues, and we've talked about this so many times, I don't know how many coffee conversations we've had about Second Amendment protests and anti-gun protests. All of these issues are behavioral. The gun is simply an inanimate object. Look at London. You know, they banned guns. So what do people start doing? Going on these mass knifings. And now, you know, they've decided they're going to ban knives. And then they'll run them over in cars like they're doing in France.
And then what are you going to do? Ban cars?
What are you going to do? Instead of addressing the behavioral issues. So I'm glad that those students paid a good respect to their friend and colleague by walking out and not being, as you said, being played as political pawns. So, Lynn, here's some interesting news. The Trump administration and Dr. Ben Carson, you know, of course, is the
sure.
Secretary of Health and Human Services and HUD, right? The Trump administration created a rule now that sets HUD back in federal compliance with forbidding illegal aliens to live in government-subsidized housing or to get subsidies to live in government-subsidized housing. What do you think of that?
Oh, I think that that's great. But I just need to take you back a little bit because Ben Carson is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
Thank you. HUD, which is what HUD yeah. sounds like, not Health and Human Services.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think that that absolutely should be the case everywhere. I don't think that an illegal should be able to rent anywhere or use government subsidized housing. I don't think that they should be able to.
So should we speculate and say that someone is going to sue and bring this to the Supreme Court
to find out
if the Supreme Court is going to rule on that? Because can you think of the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of illegal aliens that are, A, on some sort of government subsidy for housing, like Section 8 housing, that's what HUD is, Section 8 housing, or are getting subsidies for like EBTs, any type of government subsidy because they're illegals. And
yes.
So look at the ramifications of that. And then, you were talking about the Supreme Court possibly going back over precedent-setting cases. What about the, and I don't know the name of the case or even if there is that, but what about illegal aliens coming into this country and having children and those children becoming American citizens? Because that has been said was protected by the 14th Amendment. Wouldn't that be interesting for the Supreme Court to revisit that?
Well, it would be because the intent of the Constitution authors was never where we are today.
Of course.
But the cool thing about the Supreme Court is that they are making some changes and some waves. And this week they did overturn a precedent law, what they call a precedent law, which, it was kind of a minor law about people suing between states. And in 1979, they said that that was okay. And now the Supreme Court said, no, that's not okay. So you can't have an action in one state happen and then go to another state to sue them. So that is the case, and they've changed it.
And so do you think that that is what the Democrats are worried about, cases like Roe v. Wade, maybe a second look at the 14th Amendment with regards to how do you get United States citizenry when you come across the United States illegally, and then you have a child here. To me, it's always been fruits of the poisonous tree. And my look, of course, I'm not a legal scholar and don't pretend to be one. I'm not even an attorney. But when I look at the 14th Amendment, I don't understand how the heck they can read that into there, where you grant people that come into this country citizenship, the child, a citizen of an illegal alien. To me, if the foundation of why you are here in the United States is illegal, then to me, you're certainly illegal. Just
exactly.
Because you were born in the United States, I think that's a totally separate issue.
Yeah. Well, I think that what the Democrats right now are saying is, rut-row, let's see what's going to happen with this, because where could this go next? And I'm interested to see. And with that, I think I am going to hit the hay.
Me too.